Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit vikingcapitalinvestments.com/best ever. That's vikingcapitalinvestments.com/best ever to get started today.
So about 3 months later, I refinanced the property, pay off the loan on it, put some money in my pocket, and then a year later, I sold the property and made like $500,000.
Best ever listeners, before we get into today's episode and the interview with our best ever guest, I want to mention Fund That Flip, because Fund That Flip is an online lender that gives you fast, convenient access to really affordable money that you need for your flip project. So if you're doing residential flips, then the main thing I imagine that you're focused on, or the main two things, are the deal and the money. So if you've got the deal pipeline, but you need access to cash and you want to build a reputation within a group that will continue to invest their dollars into your deals, then go to fundthatflip.com/best ever. The founder of Fund That Flip is Matt Rodak, and he's actually one of my very first guests on the show. It's episode number 7. So if you have a chance, go check that out too. Familiarize yourself with Matt and what he's all about. But when you're needing money and you want an online lender that provides fast, convenient access to affordable capital for your flipping projects, then Fund That Flip's the way to go. Their team has over 200 deals under their belt, and you can actually, this is crazy, you can actually be approved immediately within 30 seconds once you put in your information. So go to fundthatflip.com/best ever and get some money for your flipping projects. Hi, best ever listeners. Welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Joe Fairless, and I hope you're having a best ever day. Today, we've got with us Toyin Dawoodu. How you doing, Toyin?
I am doing excellent.
Well, that's excellent to hear, my friend. Toyin is based in Riverside, California, and he has done over 400 deals valued at over $60 million over the last 15 years. So do the math and divide that by the 15 years, or do the take 60 million, divide it by 15 years, and that's the annual deal flow he's doing on a fix and flip, which is a strategy. He's got an MBA undergraduate degree from California State University, so he's a smart cookie, and you can say hi to him at gicdealfinders.com, as well as themagicofrealestate.info. With that being said, Toyin, you want to give the best ever listeners a little bit more about your background and what you're focused on?
Yeah, I'm an investor in Southern California real estate, and I focus mostly on fix and flip single family homes, and I've done that for over 15 years. I have other projects that I do on the side, but my passion is real estate. You know, I came along different industries, you know, including technology. I was once in technology at the beginning of the internet, and I helped design some of the tools that are used right now by Google, Facebook, and all those major internet companies. And so one of the things I'm working on right now is actually to design a new internet application that will revolutionize the real estate industry, where anyone, whether you're an agent, investor, or just an ordinary person, can make money in real estate without even doing much.
Well, that sounds too good to be true. What can you share? I'm being a little facetious, but not really. What can you share with us about that application?
Okay, it's a simple app, you know, where in the process of launching it, you download the app on your iPhone or your Android. And, you know, as people drive around, okay, you know, their neighborhood, that are always properties that are vacant, abandoned. And all they have to do is take a picture, upload it to my website. If I buy the property, they get paid anywhere from $5,000 to $5,000.
Got it. Okay. And so that's something that you've already developed?
Yes, the app is done. We launched the website about a year ago. We've tested it, everything works, and the app itself will be launched in a few weeks.
Got it. Well, best of luck to you on that venture. And on the fix and flip deals, can you tell us how you got your start in this?
Yes, I bought my first house, you know, in the 80s, like 1987. I started, after getting out of college, I looked for work for 6 months. I couldn't find a job. So I ended up in the car business with my MBA selling cars. I did that for 5 years. And then when I left the car business, I started my own business. After a couple of years, I bought my first house. And so when I bought my first house, I discovered that, you know, when I got it like 40% on the market. And about 2 or 3 months later, I was able to, you know, pull money out of it to do what is called those, I think it was FHA fix-up, right? Title I, they call it in those days. Where the government gives you $21,000 to fix up your property and make it prettier. So that's really my launch in real estate. And since then, I kind of dabble here and there. But I didn't really focus on real estate because I had so many different businesses going. I didn't focus on real estate full-time as a career until around 2001 or two.
And why the shift towards focusing on real estate versus putting those other ventures aside?
Okay, that's a good question. Because I had built all my ventures to about $10 million. And in 1997, I had a major mishap. We grew so fast, you know, we grew from like 2 employees to about 100 employees in a span of 100 months. Things went out of whack to where we couldn't handle the growth. Eventually, I lost the business. And so I had to start over again. I filed bankruptcy, had no money. So for 2 years, I was miserable. And eventually, I had to get off my butt and go and do something. And the only business that I knew that could get me quick money at that time was real estate.
What was it like filing bankruptcy?
It wasn't really. Well, bankruptcy is like a shameful process for a lot of people. But because I was already in it, because one of the businesses that I had was actually helping other people file bankruptcy. I had like a legal office. And so I knew the process. And even if you look at the fact that in this presidential election, they were harping on, you know, Donald Trump having filed bankruptcy. But I always explain to people that bankruptcy is a process that was designed by the government to actually renew the economy. Because if you are in debt and you can get out of debt, you are really useless to the economy because you are not productive. So the government devised the bankruptcy laws so that you could get rid of your debt and renew yourself and then become more productive. You know, businesses use it, individuals use it, but the individuals usually are more ashamed than businesses. So when I filed bankruptcy, to me, the first one, it wasn't, you know, actually that was my second bankruptcy. I think I filed earlier. So it was after my second bankruptcy that I had to go. I went back into real estate.
So you've gotten 2 bankruptcies under your belt. So you definitely have learned what it's like to experience that and then bounce back. What year was the second bankruptcy?
The second bankruptcy was
1999. And then you started in 2001 to focus on real estate investing.
Yes, I was miserable for 2 years. Then I said to myself, well, if you're on your back, there's only one way, one place to go up. So I got back up.
And with the 2001 start, how did you go about doing the fix and flips? And were you only doing fix and flips, or were you also doing wholesaling?
Actually, I never really did wholesale. You know, I started in 2001 with zero. I had no money, seriously. So I put an ad in my local paper. The ad cost me $295, okay? And because I had used the local paper before, so they gave me a credit. So I had the ad there for 30 days. So within the first week, somebody called me on the ad. I took over the, you know, this couple, they were moving to Orange County. They didn't want to leave their house vacant. So I took over their payment and I promised them $2,000, but I didn't have the $2,000. So I told them, okay, I'll get you 2,000 in 30 days. You just give me the grand deed. You know, so they gave me the grand deed. Then I put another ad in the paper and says, you know, 10,000 down, take over my payment. So within 30 days, I had somebody come in and he gave me 5,000. I gave 2,000 to my seller. I kept 3, and then I carried 5,000 for the new guy. That's how I got started.
Wow. That is very resourceful, among other things. So you got started with that property. Now you have $3,000 in your pocket. What do you do after that?
The ad continued to pull. And so a week later, I got a call from this guy. You know, I mean, I can't even make this up. So this guy called me. I said he wanted to sell his property. So I asked him why. He said, well, he has to move out of state. And I said, well, why do you have to move out of state? Well, he said, my father-in-law got a contract on me. And people are already knocking on my door. And they're probably going to take me out.
Like assassination?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
They were going through divorce. And so I think his father-in-law was so pissed at him, he wanted to get rid of him.
Wow.
I know. It's amazing. So I went to see him. You know, we sat down in his living room. And I said, don't worry, I'll get you out of the house.
See, I would have picked a different location to sit down and talk to him other than his living room. I would have picked like a Walmart or something, somewhere public.
That's true. But you got to look at the house. And the house was kind of fairly new, like 2 years old, you know. So,
so what'd you do? Tell us the story on that.
So I wrote the contract. Usually, I mean, I try to explain to people that real estate is actually a very simple process because real estate is the only asset you could buy, and you don't even have to show an ID. You understand? So I went there. I wrote my contract, you know, on my yellow pad, and I said, okay, I will take over your loan. You give me the grand deed, and then you don't have to worry about the payment. So I wrote the contract. You know, we went to an Old Republic. He signed over the deed to me. And on Monday, he was gone, and I had
it. Wow.
And so I did the same thing. I put an ad in the paper. I think I put another 20,000 down, take over my payment. So I got about 10,000 cash and I carried the balance for the lady that bought the property from me.
How much equity was in the house when you took it over?
When I took it over, there wasn't a whole lot of equity. I think it was like about 10 or 15,000. But I made about 20 grand in the back end. I just added, you know, $20,000 that I want to carry on his loan.
Wow. And then did you continue to do that strategy?
I continued to do that strategy for about 2 years. So I ended up with almost 40 properties doing that strategy. Okay. But it was a little bit tough because the cash flow was not as I wanted. Okay. Because I had all these properties rented. I was having headache with tenants. It was driving me nuts.
Yeah. Cause you're not making a spread on the payment, are you? You're just simply you're making the upfront fee. But from how you described it, you weren't making money on top of the monthly mortgage payment, were you?
Exactly. I couldn't make much, even if I wanted to make money. Because by the time you take the upfront fee and tell them what the current payment is, there's not a whole lot to add. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it was very tough, you know, in the initial, you know, stages. And so eventually I attended a seminar. And I think you probably heard of this gentleman, you know, he's the king of quick flips. Ron LeGrand, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So he's the granddaddy, right? So I have to give him credit for this technique. So I went to a seminar and he says, you know, for all of you guys out there renting properties and having no money in your pocket, you need to start doing quick flips. So he explained quick flips to me and I said, okay, that's what I need to do. And when I get back from the seminar, I started selling. I sold everything. And then I had some money in my pocket.
How did he describe a quick flip? What did you do?
His strategy, which he still uses today, is to buy the property, okay, buy it at a certain price, not more than 70% of the value after repairs, okay? And that formula works. I mean, any investor that deviates from that formula usually lose money. So once I learned the formula, some of the properties that I had, you know, in my inventory, I had to break even on them, but I just wanted to sell them so I can get out of them, okay? But from the time I started using the formula, you know, you buy it at 70%, you sell it a little bit below retail so you could get out quicker than everybody else, okay? And you make the spread, You know,
yep.
Your spread is usually anywhere from 20 to 30%. You know, after you pay costs and whatnot, you probably end up with 15-18% in your pocket.
So the key there is to, one, find the deals that you can get for 70% after repair value, and then two is to have a pipeline of buyers. So how did you make sure you had both of those?
Well, the pipeline of buyers are always there. But luckily for me, I am also a broker. You know, remember in those days when I had all these businesses and I lost $10 million? Well, one of my businesses was real estate brokerage, right? And mortgage banking. You know, when I got out of school and I started one of my businesses, at some point they changed the rules and they said, well, if you have a real estate license, this rule does not apply for it to you. So because I already had an MBA, so I figured, well, I'm just going to get my license. So I got my license. So now the license came in handy when I had all those properties. So all I did was put them in multiple listing, and I get paid commission for listing my own property, and I get paid on the back end for owning the property.
And then how did you find them?
Once you put a property in the multiple listing, other agents will sell it for you. It's as simple as that.
No, I'm sorry. How did you find the properties to purchase to do the quick flip?
Oh, okay. You know, as an investor, and one of the things most people don't realize is that, you know, once you get into real estate, it's just a business. It's like any other business. So you have to understand the art of advertising, okay? So I spent a lot of money on advertising. At some point, I was spending anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000 a month on advertising just to bring in the deals, okay? So majority of my deals came from advertising, direct mail. I kept my newspaper ad going. I had ads in the Penny Saver in those days. You know, I don't know if you know Penny Saver. It's all over the, it used to be a publication that goes all over Southern California and in some parts of the country. So every week, I am in 750,000 homes every week for about 3, 4, 5 years.
Wait, will you repeat that? 700 and what?
I was in 750,000 homes.
Oh, homes. Got it. Your ad was reaching 750,000 homes.
Correct.
Got it. Okay. I was like, wait a second. He just bought 750,000 homes. Got it. Okay. Will you, I just want to understand a little bit better the $10 million that you lost and now you've bounced back. Was that revenue that was $10 million or what was the $10 million mark and how is it comprised?
How is it calculated? That's a good question. Okay. So when I had my other businesses, so I had a real estate mortgage company, I had a bankruptcy legal department, and I had a debt consolidation in an insurance business. Okay. So what I do.
There's some irony there.
Yeah, exactly. but the focus was on mostly consumers. Okay. And in that time, we had a little recession also. You know, people were going bankrupt, some were buying houses. So because I had the expertise on all of them, so I had different departments, different businesses, you know, with different names. So at the time we grew from like 8 employees to about 100 employees. Okay. I had 10,000 clients. Okay. And so a lot of my revenue was carried in the back end. Okay. So that when somebody signed up to file, say, for example, to file for bankruptcy, usually it costs about $900. Okay. So we take some event, sometimes we take some money down. And then I will carry the rest, you know, without any interest for them. Okay. So one of the things that led to the headache was the fact that we had so many clients, we had so many complaints, and the competitors, you know, were breathing down my neck. Okay. So eventually the complaints reached the DA. So the DA came and basically raided my office and put me out of business. Okay.
And what were the complaints?
The complaint was that, number one, we weren't doing the work on time, and they already paid for the bankruptcy. We haven't filed it. But the agreement was that they had to pay in full before we can file it. The major complaint really was the fact that we had too much business, period. So we couldn't handle it.
Wow. I did not anticipate our conversation going this direction at all. What was the result of the raid?
Well, and that's the thing. It's another lesson for people that are going to go into business. And that's one lesson that I learned. Once you have clients and customers, okay, your number one goal should be to take care of those clients. So when I was smaller business, I could take care of all the clients. You know, they know me. They have my phone number. But as we begin to grow, we were adding 1,000 clients every month. So it was difficult for them to actually reach me. So some of my assistants, they will reach who are new, didn't know how to handle it. So people were complaining and complaining. So eventually, when my office was raided, it took almost 2 years before the district attorney tried to resolve what was the problem, right? Eventually, they resolved it and they decided, well, they're going to charge me for, you know, all kind of stuff. So I was actually indicted, okay? So it took me almost 6-7 years to get out of the situation. Eventually, I had to settle the case with the district attorney and paid $50,000.
And was it just a monetary fine, or was there anything else that was involved?
Oh yeah, it was a monetary fine and a plea to not displaying my license, right? So we had to compromise to some kind of plea, you know. So one of the charges was that I didn't have a license. Well, eventually they found out I have a license. So to get out of the indictment, they said, okay, fine, you plead to the fact that you didn't display your license and pay $50,000. And then, the case was dismissed.
Wow.
But it cost me $1 million, I'm telling you right now. So when you are in business and you don't take care of your customers, things happen, okay? So during that time that I had to go to real estate, I needed money. So I had to really focus, okay, to get money to pay attorneys on a case that took me almost 8 years to resolve.
There's so many lessons here. We haven't even gotten to the money question. Toyin, what's the best real estate investing advice ever?
Focus on what you know, period. Don't try to do things that you haven't actually mastered. And I learned that lesson about maybe 4-5 years ago. I decided, okay, since I bought so many houses, I'm going to go and start developing properties. But I didn't learn the process before the recession came in. When the recession came in, it took me out, lost about $1 million. So that was a lesson for me right there that I should have focused on my single family homes.
And with those single family homes that you're doing now, are you primarily doing the quick flips still?
I still do quick flips. I do it very creatively because I know it so much back and forth, even I can do it in my sleep. So it's a lot easy for me to make, especially creative deals where, you could make deals without having investing even some of your own money, by bringing in other investors and stuff like that.
And how are you finding the deals right now?
Right now, I'm actually focusing on deals that are in foreclosure. There are a lot, even though the recession is over, last year, there's still about 500,000 properties that went into foreclosure. So I find deals where I could negotiate a discount, what they call short sale, right? So I do a lot of short sales now, and I make quite a good living doing that. I don't do a lot of advertising today because the short sales don't require a lot of advertising. You just have to pull up the foreclosure list and go knock on doors.
What's a typical deal look like right now as far as numbers go for you?
Okay, so I just did a deal, okay? We negotiated the property from a loan balance of 355 to 106, okay? And so we're going to spend about $10,000 fixing the property, and when we sell it, the lease price is about $193,000. So the spread is about $75,000.
Got it. And how frequently are you doing those types of deals right now?
Well, I did three in November.
Wow. Okay. And you're finding them through where exactly?
I have GICDealFinders.com. Uh-huh. In my GIC Deal Finders membership, which we started last year, I have about 5,400 members right now. And so I train them to find me deals all over the country. And so they bring deals. I analyze it. If I buy it, they get paid. One of the deals we did about 2-3 months ago was in Maryland. We bought it for 20. About 2 months later, we sold it for 50. I made a quick, 30 grand and left.
You ready for the best ever lightning round?
Sure.
All right. First, a quick word from our best ever partners.
If you need money for your flipping project, then go to fundthatflip.com/best ever. You'll know within 30 seconds if you're approved or not to get money for your residential flip. Go to fundthatflip.com/best ever. Best ever listeners, join me in subscribing to the Family Office Podcast. The host, Richard Wilson, you can learn more about him, episode 447. The reason why you'll want to subscribe and listen to this podcast is he talks about how billionaire families think and how to attract the ultra wealthy into your business. The Family Office Podcast.
Toyin, what's the best ever book you've read?
The best book I've read is called The Magic of Thinking Big. And that's what inspired my book, The Magic of Real Estate. I bought The Magic of Thinking Big by David Schwartz when I was 17 years old. And I still have the book. I read it almost every few years. And I still refer to it every time I encounter any kind of problem or, you know, sometimes when you feel like, well, you're missing something, okay? And you have the fears come in. So you go back to the book and I go into certain chapters, read it, and I get my confidence back.
Are you originally from the U.S.?
No, I was born in Nigeria. I moved to the U.S. in 1981.
Okay, so you moved to the U.S. in 1981.
Yeah.
And you graduated in 1987 from Cal State?
Correct, yeah.
Got it, okay. Best ever personal growth experience, and what'd you learn from it?
It was my business, you know, that I lost $10 million. And what I learned is that you have to take care of your customers. Your network, your suppliers, everybody that is around you that do business with you, you have to give them your best. And if they say, when you have a complaint, you personally get involved and take care of it immediately.
Best ever way you like to give back?
One of the best ways I want to give back now is actually to educate people that real estate is not as complicated as, you know, it's made out to be. Okay, like I explained earlier, you don't even need a driver's license to buy property, okay? And you could buy property. I mean, give you an example. I had a bet with somebody that I could buy a property in my dog's name, right? And so I bought this property, but I couldn't really put it in my dog's name because when it's time to sell, my dog has to, you know, sign. Okay, so since he's not a human, he can't sign. So I decided I'll put it in my little girl's name. My daughter is 10 years old. So I created a trust for her and I put the property in her name.
So you lost the bet, but you proved your point, basically.
Correct.
What's the best ever deal you've done?
The best deal I did was, maybe 2005 or something. I bought this property, and it was the same strategy. You know, I was going to give them some money and take over their payment. But when I looked at the profile, the property was actually two different lots, already split, okay? So, you know, the owners know that there were two properties there. But they had a loan on both of them combined. So I decided, okay, you know, I'm going to get the grand deed. So I had them, you know, sign over the grand deed to me. I gave them some money down. But when we closed escrow, I made sure the grand deed was two separate properties. So they gave two grand deeds because the property already had two APNs. Okay. So about 3 months later, I refinanced the property, pay off the loan on it, put some money in my pocket. And then a year later, I sold the property and made like $500,000. I bought it. I took over their note for like $300,000, gave them some money down. When we sold the property 2 years later, I sold it for $995,000.
Did you try and find one of those deals again?
You know, you can't really look for it, but sometimes they fall in your lap. I mean, that's the way I asked.
And where do you typically buy? Like, what city was that deal in?
In Riverside. You know, it's always good to stay in your backyard, you know. But, I mean, now I buy all over the country because I have the expertise to do that. But when you're first starting out, you're better off to actually stay in your backyard.
What's the biggest mistake you've made so far in real estate?
Well, the biggest mistake I really made was trying to get into development without actually learning the process.
And, Toyin, what's the best ever place the best ever listeners can reach you?
The best place they can reach me is on my GICDealFinders.com. You know, they can log in, become a member, and they can reach me there anytime.
Well, this conversation went so many different directions that I didn't anticipate, and it was so engaging. I didn't know where you're going to take us next. What a colorful background that you have with, you know, two bankruptcies, a master's degree, a DA rating your office because of consumer complaints, and yet you've come out of that. And you are doing deals. You said you're doing three deals a month. and you are primarily doing the fix and flip. You started out very creatively, where the first property you just placed an ad in the newspaper, got a call or called them up once you got a lead and took over their payments, paid them $2,000, promised to pay them $2,000. You didn't have the $2,000, so then you put another ad in the paper, got someone to put down $10,000. And $5,000 was carried, and $3,000 in your pocket, $2,000 to the seller, and then you just did it again. And then, just the learning experiences. I am grateful that you were so candid with us about your learning experiences. That's not typical. It's not typical that somebody would be so forthcoming about the different things that you've come across in your life. And there's a lot of lessons to be learned. One of them is, like you said, take care of your customers, because according to you, the reason why there were the issues is because you just had too much business and not enough infrastructure, and you weren't able to pay attention to those as they were coming up. And then two, just being resourceful. And then three, I mean, you've got a never say die attitude. As you said, when you're on your back, the only place is just to get back up, because you're at the back, or you're at the bottom. So you really, a lot of lessons, very, very entertaining story, life story, and looking forward to kind of seeing where your path continues to go. So thanks so much for being on the show, Toyin, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, Joe. Talk to you soon.
I want to mention Fund That Flip, because Fund That Flip is an online lender that gives you fast, convenient access to really affordable money that you need for your flip project. So if you're doing residential flips, then the main thing I imagine that you're focused on, or the main two things, are the deal and the money. So if you've got the deal pipeline, but you need access to cash and you want to build a reputation within a group that will continue to invest their dollars into your deals, then go to fundthatflip.com/best ever. The founder of Fund That Flip is Matt Rodak, and he's actually one of my very first guests on the show. It's episode number 7. So if you have a chance, go check that out too, familiarize yourself with Matt and what he's all about. But when you're needing money and you want an online lender that provides fast, convenient access to affordable capital for your flipping projects, then Fund That Flip's the way to go. Their team has over 200 deals under their belt, and you can actually, this is crazy, you can actually be approved immediately within 30 seconds once you put in your information. So go to fundthatflip.com/best ever and get some money for your flipping projects. Best ever listeners, join me in subscribing to the Family Office Podcast. The host, Richard Wilson, you can learn more about him, episode 447. The reason why you'll want to subscribe and listen to this podcast is he talks about how billionaire families think and how to attract the ultra wealthy into your business. The Family Office Podcast.